this NPR station.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
Welcome to Radioactivity on 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. My name is Sean Canaan. I'm filling in today for Rob Lori. He'll be back on Thursday. So thanks for joining us on Radioactivity. And every Monday morning, Rob plays the audio of his television show from WEDU. It's called Florida This Week. So we are going to hear that at the beginning of the show today. We'll hear Florida This Week with the panelists from Rob's show. And then we'll take your calls. The number to call in is 813-239-9663. And we can talk about the day's news or especially what we hear on this half hour of Florida This Week. So stay tuned right now. You're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa, WMNF.org. Here's this week's episode of Florida This Week.
Coming up next, Florida plays a big role in the Mueller report. The legislature moves forward with plans to arm teachers. Democrats put up roadblocks to more toll highways in the state. And Rick Scott wants to send troops to Venezuela. Political insights next on Florida This Week. Welcome back. This week our panelists are Steve Busquet is a columnist and editorial board member for the South Florida Sun-Sentinel. Stanley Gray is a civic activist and a Republican. Alex Sink is the former chief financial officer of the state of Florida and a Democrat. And Michael Van Sickler is the government and politics editor at the Tampa Bay Times. So it's so nice to have you here. Good to see you. Well, before we start with the Florida topics, let me ask a quick question of our panel about the big national story. Florida is mentioned at least 30 times in the just-released Mueller report. Perhaps the most disturbing reference is that the FBI believes a Russian military intelligence agency was able to gain access to the elections network in one Florida county. The Russians in November 2016 sent spear phishing emails containing malicious malware to more than 120 accounts of Florida elections officials, according to the Palm Beach Post. State officials reached out to the FBI, but the Bureau declined to say which county in Florida was in the crosshairs, and Mueller's report said his investigators didn't take time to chase it down. Steve, let's start with you. Do you think there's anything more there that should be looked at based on what we know about Florida and the Mueller report?
Well, we learned in 2016 that the possibility of penetration of an election system is an ongoing threat, and it's going to be there again in 2020. So it needs to be taken seriously. But I'm skeptical, and I think that if they believe that one of the counties had their election apparatus penetrated, they should tell us who it was. And they haven't done so. You know, I reported on this at the time, and the closest we got to concluding where this might have happened was Volusia County, Daytona Beach, where the elections department confirmed that an employee opened up one of these spear phishing emails which can attack the system. But they were insistent that there was no harm done. And it needs to be restated that this would be penetrating voter registration information, not who voted for who. How you voted is not on the internet. Voting machine stuff is not on the internet. So,
could it be used to depress the vote if you were able to get into those voter registration files?
Theoretically, one of the things you could do is make it look like John Smith has already voted absentee when he never asked for an absentee ballot, for example.
Is anybody calling for a further investigation so far?
No, and the state of Florida said this week that they're disputing the Mueller report. They're saying that they're not aware of any county being attacked.
Okay, so Alex, what does the Mueller report mean for us in Florida? The bigger picture, what does it mean for us here in Florida?
Well, Rob, I think the bigger picture is that we need
many checks and balances in our system of government, and I am very pleased that the American people gave the control of the House to the Democrats, because I think the Democrats who are in charge of these committees now in Congress are going to continue to ask questions. They're going to continue to investigate. There's still open questions. This thing is not over yet. That being said, I think that the message for 2020 is for Democrats to go back and focus on the issues that are really important to the voters, things like access to health care, the jobs, improving wage levels in this country, protecting our environment. So I think you're going to hear Democrats as a whole go back and talk about the issues that the everyday voter is caring about, not so much the Mueller report, although there is a responsibility to investigate, to continue to ask questions, and let's see what happens in the Southern District of New York, because there are still a lot of cases outstanding, particularly Roger Stone, who has a big Florida history.
And there are calls on Friday, as we tape this show, for President Trump to be impeached, or at least Congress to look into impeaching President Trump based on the Mueller report. What do you think about all the talk by some Democrats of impeachment?
I'll go back to what Speaker Pelosi had to say, that going down the path of impeachment would be a total distraction. Mueller said himself that there was no criminal basis for the Russian involvement. The obstruction issues, there are 14 issues out there. He has a path to investigate. But at this point in time, most Democrats are not seeing that these charges are going to lead to impeachment. And I kind of like what Steny Hoyer said. We're going to get to decide in November of 2020 whether the American people want to return a person with no morals, no character, and who lies back to the White House.
All right. Well, we'll see where this goes. Well, Democrats failed in their attempt this week to strip language out of a state Senate school safety bill that would expand a law allowing some teachers to carry guns in school. They argue that more guns in schools could make them more dangerous. The law was originally passed after 17 people were killed at a Parkland high school. The law, enacted last year, allows some classroom teachers to volunteer to carry weapons after they undergo training and psychological evaluations in the districts that adopt the program. But those teachers also have to have a role outside the classroom, such as an athletic coach. The bill being considered would change that and would allow any teacher to participate, and that frightens Democrats. Republicans argue that no teacher or district would be forced to go along with the program. So far, 25 of Florida's 67 school districts have approved participation in the Guardian program. One argument for arming teachers is that in some rural areas, the nearest law enforcement officer may be 20 minutes away. Democrats say they support other aspects of the school safety bill, which includes provisions requiring schools to report violent incidents. The Senate is scheduled to vote on the bill this coming Tuesday, and a similar bill is being considered in the House. So, Steve, does it look like the Guardian program is going to be expanded? What's your take on how close it is to being passed by both the Senate and the House?
No, I think this bill is going to pass, yeah. Despite efforts by the Democrats to curtail it. This is a good time to mention something that we've talked about on the show in the past, which is if as few as two state Senate seats were to switch from Republican to Democrat, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Why is that?
Because that bill wouldn't pass. Because there are always one or two Republicans in the Senate who will stray and vote with the Democrats because they have very moderate districts. Generally speaking, they're from Miami-Dade, generally. Mm-hmm. Anna Terry, Flores being one. But you know, teachers are overworked and they're underpaid. There's a teacher shortage, a severe teacher shortage in this state. Our salaries are below the national average. Poll after poll shows this is a very unpopular idea.
Stanley, what about this? Now, the Guardian program, would be voluntary. Not every school district would have to do it. Does it make sense to arm teachers, do you think?
I think it makes no sense, and let me tell you the real reason. We don't have any mechanisms, one, to see how fit they are as marksmen, continual training. And the other part of this is that what are we going to do to confirm their mental state? Mm-hmm. In the Marine Corps, you had this program called PRP, Personal Reliability Program. Every 6 months, they would go out and they would investigate you to make sure that you were acting normal. And that's people who were around our munitions depots, people who were responsible for being around the president. They check those things. I've heard nothing that would give me confidence and letting teachers have weapons.
How many years were you on active duty in the Marines?
Almost 11, sir.
Uh-huh. And did you ever, I mean, how much weapons training did you have in that time?
Well, in the Marine Corps, one of the things that we pride ourselves on is our marksmanship. Every year, you're going to go back to the rifle range and the pistol range. And when you don't go to the pistol range for the whole week, you have to do what's called familiarization firing. I've heard nothing mentioned about this with teachers. This alarms me.
And getting in a firefight, I mean, not that any teacher wants to get into one, it'd be a terrible situation, but we see firefights on TV and fictional films and fictional TV shows. Well, do we have any sense of what it's like to be in an actual situation?
I'm going to give you a quick analogy. Let's just take, for the record, the Marine Corps is the finest fighting organization in the world, okay? For the record, okay? But within that, you have like a regular infantry squad, and then let's just say that you would have a regular special operations reconnaissance or raider, all right? Well, the raiders and the reconnaissance people, they train under stress all the time. So when they get called to bring fire, they're going to be more accurate. I'm still going to tell you that the Marine Infantry Squad, they're going to be more accurate than the average person, but there's a big difference in that. So with all this training that's going on, and I'm looking at, now you say you want to arm teachers, I don't see anywhere to the level that I could think that they could actually fire with reliability. Mm-hmm. I mean, just because you get fired on doesn't mean that you're actually aiming when you fire back.
Alex, if those response times are true, though, if it takes 20 minutes in some rural parts of Florida to get a law enforcement officer on the scene of a school where there might be a school shooting, does it make sense to maybe in some of the rural areas allow those communities, those school boards might go ahead with this? Or what do you think? Do you think it's a good idea?
Well, As a mother and thinking about my two children attending Hillsborough County Public Schools, it scares the hell out of me to think that teachers are going to have guns in their classroom. And my pushback on the argument about the rural school districts, I've been in every one of our 67 counties, is they shouldn't be 20 minutes away from a sheriff or a policeman or someone that has the ability to fire back. And so whatever happened to the idea that we have some armed person, trained law enforcement officer actually within the close environments of almost every school in this state. So that, to me, that holds no water. I'm more fearful of the fact that I think there should be trained armed people around, but it shouldn't be every teacher in every classroom or any teacher in any classroom environment just because of the reasons that Stanley said.
Michael, do we know where the PTAs around the state are on this issue and where are the teachers on this issue and where are the local police departments on this issue?
I think this is a really good example of it's a great manifestation of the rural-urban divide in Florida. In Miami, Anna Terra Flores, a senator, she is opposed to the Guardian program, and she has voiced her opposition. One of the reasons why is in these urban districts, a lot of these kids live in neighborhoods with a lot of guns, mm-hmm. and the schools for these children are one of the safe havens. So if you're going to arm teachers, you're taking away another safe haven. And so you're seeing a lot of opposition, even from Republicans in these urban areas, who are saying there has to be a better way to go about it.
Now, Bob Gualtieri, who chaired the commission that investigated this after the Parkland shooting, was apparently opposed to this idea at the start of that, but as the head of the commission, hearing testimony from around the state, he gradually came in favor of this position.
And I got to say, that reversal has really helped drive this narrative, because last year this was considered a out of the mainstream idea, and it took the sheriff to change his opinion on that at the very beginning, and it seems to have certainly carried a lot of weight with it.
All right. So. Well, a plan for expanding and building three new toll roads in the western side of Florida was put on hold temporarily by its sponsor Wednesday as Democrats demanded more details on the environmental impact. State Senator Tom Lee, the notice as a Republican, said the plan is not dead and it's likely to eventually pass the Senate and become a conference issue when the House and Senate hammer out the final budget. The proposal calls for spending $45 million next year and would establish task forces to study economic and environmental impacts of extending the Suncoast Parkway from the Tampa Bay area north all the way to the Georgia border, extending the Florida Turnpike west from Wildwood to hook up with the Suncoast Parkway, and building a new road directly linking Polk County to Collier County. Critics have decried the potential for sprawl and negative environmental impacts by building the roads through mostly rural areas. The plan is backed by State Senate President Bill Galvano of Bradenton, who said the roads will help rural communities, provide new hurricane evacuation routes, expand bicycle and pedestrian trails, and lay the groundwork for new water and sewer lines and broadband.
So, Michael, the fact that Bill Galvano is in favor of this, that's really the key to this, whether it goes ahead this year, right? Because when you're the Senate president, you're pretty powerful in Tallahassee.
You're very powerful. And it was a surprise to the reporters and editors who were watching the senator in, I think it was during the presentation when they're announcing their agendas. He announced this. Nobody knew that this was a priority of his until he announced it at the very beginning of session. So it does raise questions. And Mr. Bosquet over there is a more practiced observer of the legislature. Every year there's one of these things that they trade. And I'm still not sure that Galvano isn't using this as a chit to trade later.
Steve, what's your take on that? Is this a negotiating position, or is he sincere about seeing expansion of toll roads in Florida?
I think I've talked to him about it several times. I think he's sincere about it. Yeah. A lot of people think he's misguided about it, but I think he is sincere. He grew up in Highlands County. He went to Sebring High School. Galvano has some history in that part of the state, okay? So, but there's a real debate to be had here. But as we saw this week out of Tallahassee, the Senate is bending over backwards to give House Speaker Jose Oliva what he wants, which are all these deregulation of healthcare things like certificate of need for hospitals. Mm-hmm. So the flip side of that coin, I think, is that Galvano gets some version of his road plan. To me, Tom Lee has at times not seemed overly enthusiastic about this thing. Lee is carrying this bill in the Senate, and Lee has been through the years pretty transparent when he has reservations about something and doesn't like it, and he's not afraid to sort of buck the system. The language has in it all sorts of bell and whistle things about task forces and stuff. They're trying to empower the environmental community a lot more, and there's going to be a massive amount of environmental opposition to these ideas.
Alex, is there grassroots demand for these new toll roads in the state?
You may be surprised to hear my answer about this, but let's talk about not the politics, but the realities. We're back to a point where we have more than 1,000 people a day are moving into Florida. That's 300,000 people a year. And extrapolate that out, millions more are coming to Florida. And look at our roads. We have I-95 and I-75. And I had to drive from South St. Pete to Jacksonville recently. And the fact that my route had to take me right through the middle of downtown Tampa, it seemed absurd and ridiculous. And also I got an I-75. This was during spring break, and both roads during spring break are a parking lot. So something does need to be done. Let's look at the bigger picture. And I think that as long as we are very protective of, I'm very involved with the Florida Wildlife Corridor, where we have wildlife that still have paths to travel throughout our state from south to north, I think there's a compromise and an answer here that achieves the fact that we just don't want to be Atlanta and just be in total gridlock. So something has to give, and I think if they get the, I don't know why we have to have $45 million next year, but to start a planning process and start the conversation and start speculating, how are we going to handle millions more Floridians on roads that are parking lots today?
Now, there's some powerful opposition to Stanley. The Sierra Club says this is one of their big issues this year. They don't want these toll roads to be developed and built.
Well, I look at this from a kind of another vantage point, and that is that, as you pointed out, Alex, we do have a lot of people moving to Florida. And one of the problems that we have is as our cities are expanding is affordable housing. So what's happening is the people who live in cities, they're going to get, unless we really come up with a plan, they're going to have to move out. So now they're going to have a bigger burden because now they're going to have to pay more to use the roads. And the truth of the matter is if we have more people outside of the cities, there are going to be more people on the roads. I know this sounds very idyllic. We need to have a transportation solution. I'm not saying that we should not have these roads, but it needs to be a part of a solution. And what I'm seeing proposed right now, this is adding to a problem, not making it better.
Road building is adding to the problem.
Yes, sir.
And can we even talk about transit? I mean, this is all geared for road building. We have a lot of roads, and look where that's gotten us. So maybe we should think of another road.
Alex, should there be a high-speed rail between South St. Petersburg and Jacksonville?
Well, if you had elected me governor, we would have one.
All right. Well, last week, Florida's junior U.S. Senator Rick Scott said the U.S. should consider sending American troops to Venezuela to deliver humanitarian aid to the people of that country. There are economic problems in Venezuela. This year, the Trump administration ordered an embargo on Venezuelan oil, which has contributed to a drop in dollar revenue, a decline in the economy, and shortages there. But sending U.S. troops would be an unprecedented escalation of the tension between the two countries. Sending troops into Venezuela without President Maduro's approval, even in a humanitarian capacity, would significantly escalate the ongoing standoff between Juan Guaido and Maduro. Guaido, the head of the National Assembly, who has claimed that he is the legitimate leader of Venezuela, is backed by the U.S. and about 50 other countries around the world. Russia, China, Cuba, and Turkey, though, continue to recognize President Maduro as Venezuela's legitimate leader.
So, Stanley, was Senator Rick Scott pandering to Venezuelan votes, or was he serious, do you think, about sending U.S. troops there? And is it a good idea to help the people out by sending U.S. troops without the okay of the president?
I'm going to apologize for my statement before I say it. The statement sounds like that of a person who does not understand Navy, and their vantage point is that of a Navy E3 or E4 person. I think that he really doesn't understand history. If he understands what we did in Lebanon, the first time was in the 50s. We went in the 70s, went in the 80s. Similar situation. What did it get us? Dominican Republic. What did it get us? I think that I don't know whether he's pandering for votes or whatever, but it just does not make sense. It does not make sense. And furthermore, from a military vantage point, you go in for aid, what's going to happen when they get fired upon? And they will be fired upon. This country is in a state of revolt.
Yeah. Steve, there are a lot of, I think it's fair to say, Cuban Americans, Venezuelan Americans, some people come from other countries, and they bring with them a pretty fervent anti-communism. A lot of them live in the Miami area, and it's good for some votes in that part of the state, right?
Sure.
Rick
Scott narrowly defeated Bill Nelson in part, in no small part, because he had an excellent outreach program in the Hispanic community, including in the Venezuelan community in Miami. Having said that, I'm watching Rick Scott adjust to a new life from governor to going to a United States senator, and in some ways, from my vantage point, it's not going well. He's had scrapes with Ron DeSantis. He got into a scrape with Chuck Schumer the other day on Twitter, and now this. Which is more controversial. Rick Scott ought to be asking his constituents how they feel about more foreign entanglements, because they're not as popular as Rick Scott makes them out to be.
Mm-hmm. Alice, what do you think about sending U.S. troops to Venezuela?
Oh, I think it's a terrible idea. Look at our history in Latin America. The CIA sending troops into other countries in Latin America. To me, it's a total pandering to a small group of voters in South Florida, and I just can't understand how he would come up with such a serious idea with serious, as Stanley says, consequences. And remember that we've got China, Russia, and Cuba on the other side in Venezuela, and who knows, this could be World War III.
Yeah. And Michael, just quickly, it could be a heavy lift. I mean, even to convince Republicans up there in Washington to allow this to happen, that would be, even for Rick Scott, it would be a heavy lift to convince him.
Well, yeah, and he's one of 100 right now. So I think we're going to see over the next week or so, the news cycle is moving so quickly that this will be long forgotten.
All right. Well, before we go, what other news stories should we be paying attention to? And Stanley, let's start with you, your other big story.
I think one of the things that we should all be concerned with is the inactivity of our representation, as we have not done anything about the generators in nursing homes. Mm-hmm. We're getting ready to start the hurricane season again, and we've done nothing again.
And we know what happened the last time. Michael, your other big story?
Well, last year during the Republican primary, the issue of the concealed weapon permit program was a huge issue because Adam Putnam was running it, and it was there was a lot of allegations of mismanagement, and so he lost. But the new commissioner of agriculture, who oversees that, has she concluded that it's overwhelmed and it needs money, and it'll be interesting to see in the legislature if she gets the money she says she needs to get it up to speed again.
And does it still belong in agriculture?
That's weird, but yes.
All right. Alex, your other big story.
My big story is something that's coming up on May the 1st, week after next, and I'll put a plug in for the Rise of the Rest bus tour. Steve Case, the founder of AOL, has put hundreds of millions of dollars into shining a light on other communities around this country who are supporting startup technology businesses, and this is going to make national news for us, and so stay tuned for May the 1st, the Rise of the Rest bus tour, and see which of the companies wins a $100,000 investment from the Rise of the Rest bus tour. It's going to be very exciting for Tampa Bay.
Tampa Bay,
yes,
all right.
Both St. Petersburg and Tampa will be participating.
Very good. Steve Busquet, your other big story.
Rob, my new newspaper, the South Florida Sun Sentinel, won the Pulitzer Prize for Public Service this week, which is the most prestigious of the Pulitzers, for its coverage, relentless coverage of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas tragedy. And two other great Florida newspapers, the Miami Herald and the Tampa Bay Times, were Pulitzer finalists, which is no small accomplishment either. So we all know the acute financial pressures that are facing the newspaper industry. They're unending. And there are buyouts and all kinds of problems everywhere. But this shows that Florida newspapers are still doing really, really important stuff, and it needs to be recognized. So that's a good thing for Floridians.
People should buy subscriptions to their local papers. Thank you so much. It's great to see you all. Thanks for watching Florida This Week. Your comments are always welcome. Please write us at ftw@wedu.org and continue the conversation on Facebook.
Well, that was Florida This Week from Rob Lori and WEDU. And if you'd like to make a comment about this, give us a call, 813-239-9663. You can also email us at dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. My name is Sean Canaan. It's 11:33 in the morning. You're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. You may be listening to wmnf.org. I have a few emails to read that came in during the show, and we have some other things that I want to bring up as well. If you'd like to talk about any of these topics, we would like to put you on the air, 813-239-9663. Well, let me read a couple of emails. First comes from Mark about new roads. He says, if we currently have 1,000 people a day moving into Florida and we build new roads and make it even easier to drive into Florida, the number of people moving into Florida per day is only going to increase. That will clog the new roads as well. We've seen that here in Manatee County, when they build new roads, they become congested immediately. The solution to the problem is not to build new roads to accommodate more people. It's to slow the growth and stop encouraging more people to move into Florida. As it is, in the last 2 years, Manatee County has become just like Pinellas County or Hillsborough. We're overwhelmed and we have gridlock. It's no longer a snowbird season issue. It's a year-round problem. Growth is the issue. We should have a moratorium on new construction. So that's our first comment from Mark out there in cyberspace in Manatee County. So thank you for that comment, Mark. Also, I want to read a text message from Jeff in Newport Richey. And Jeff takes issue with how Senator Rick Scott was introduced. Florida and all states have two senators, and so the one who is elected first sometimes gets the title the senior senator of the state, and the person who is elected second gets sometimes the title junior senator of the state. So here's Jeff's comment, I will be so glad when we do to little Marco what we did to do nothing Nelson, so you can drop that partisan chicanery of adding the word junior to Senator Rick Scott's title. So that's the important text we got from Jeff in Newport Richey. Well, here's David out there in cyberspace who is writing about alternatives to I-75, because that's we're back on the roads now. He says, this might be kind of controversial, but I agree with Alex Sink that we need some alternatives to the major highways in Florida. I-75, I-95, I-4, and Florida's Turnpike are all filled to capacity, and we could use some alternative freeways to help alleviate the congestion. These new highways would also be good for commerce by helping semi-trucks get out of the congestion. The intersection of I-75 and the Turnpike is a terrible bottleneck that's not going away anytime soon. So that's a comment out there from David. So we've gotten two different perspectives on the roads issue. And if you'd like to drop us a line, it's DJ@WMNF.org, or you can text 813-433-0885, and you can give us a call at 813-239-9663. You're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. Rob will be back on Thursday. I'm Sean Canaan. I'm filling in today on Radioactivity in the next couple of days. So I'm going to read one more email that came in from Jason, and he's talking about impeachment, and this is, goes back to the Mueller report, which was the first topic on Florida this week. To take impeachment off the table and leave it to the voters is a complete abdication of responsibility on the part of the House Democrats. It's a clear statement on their part that politics is more important than the rule of law. So that's Jason's opinion out there in cyberspace. 813-239-9663. I'm going to read a little bit an update about Sri Lanka, and then we'll go to the phones. And I want to also tell you that I hope you stay tuned, because at the top of the hour at 12:06, I'm going to play a debate between five of the six city council candidates who will be on tomorrow's ballot in the city of Tampa. So if you live in Tampa, or if you're affected by anything that happens in the city of Tampa, which is pretty much all of us, you probably, I hope you can listen to my show at 12:06 coming up on Midpoint on 88.5 FM. Well, Sri Lanka's Minister of Tourism says 39 foreign tourists were killed in the Easter Sunday attacks on churches and hotels, while another 28 were wounded. The tourism minister says his ministry is working closely with the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and local diplomatic missions to ensure formalities with regard to the victims are sorted out as quickly as possible. In today's statement, he added, the government has already offered assistance to all victims, the damaged places of worship, as well as the hotels affected by Sunday's attacks. He said Sri Lanka's tourism industry and the government was doing everything possible to ensure the safety of those in the country. A total of 9 bombings yesterday killed at least 290 people and wounded about 500 more. Meanwhile, a van parked near a Sri Lankan church that was bombed has exploded today, but no injuries have been reported. So that's if you'd like to talk about Sri Lanka, or if you want to weigh in on which side of the roads argument you came in on, whether you agree with Mark, or if whether you agree with David, the number to call in, 813-239-9663. Well, we'll go to the phones right now. We have Gary in Dunedin, and Gary, you're going to weigh in on people moving in and on the roads issue.
That's right, and you know, you never know what you've lost until you've lost it. And most people who didn't grow up here in Florida, in the Tampa Bay area, or who are under 30, you don't know what we've lost because of population growth. There's just no way around it, that every new person that comes to live here is a polluter, a defecator. They end up on the roads. They end up taking up space. They end up making noise. And to accommodate them, native Florida, habitat, plants, trees, animals, natural beauty is destroyed. And I mean massacred. Like if you look at land stat photos of Florida from 1970 and you look at them now, you'll see that this once was a green tropical paradise from Georgia to the Keys. Now it's mostly gray and black from asphalt, concrete, steel development, etc. So even though our uber capitalist freedom system says that private property rights are sacred and you can't put a moratorium on growth in Florida, just like if you keep pulling people onto a lifeboat, it'll sink. That's what's happening to Florida. and there shouldn't be any more roads built. There shouldn't be any more expansion of anything that accommodates population growth. We got to figure out a way, not just to stop them from coming here, but to send back a lot of the ones that have come. This was a tropical paradise. Now it's an urban Hades, and it's only going to get worse unless people realize we've far exceeded carrying capacity here, and it's time to stop people from coming to Florida.
Gary, thanks for that call. I think that people might disagree about the idea of putting people on trains and shipping them out of the state. If we had trains, I guess there is Amtrak. Once or twice a day, Amtrak leaves Florida. But that might be a little bit of an extreme. But I think that, what do you think about Gary's idea that people can think about what the state has lost and whether there should be a carrying capacity and a limit, an upper limit for the population in Florida? If you'd like to weigh in, the number is 813-239-9663. You can email dj at wmnf.org. Text 813-433-0885. You're listening to 88.5 FM, WMNF Tampa. You might be listening on the WMNF app or on wmnf.org. It's 11:41 in the morning. My name is Sean Canaan. I'm hosting Radioactivity this morning. Rob will be back on Thursday. And we're taking your calls. And we're going to go to Charlie in St. Petersburg in just a minute. But I do want to read on some of these text messages that are coming in fast and furious. This is from area code 813. Please sign your text if you send us a text. US 19 paired with Suncoast Parkway is a great way to avoid the death trap of I-75 north of Tampa. And if you didn't get to hear it, so thank you for that 813 text. If you didn't get to hear it last week, maybe it was Friday, on Rob's Radioactivity show, he did have some Sierra Club people in talking about this bill that Senator Galvano has introduced and is likely going to pass, possibly, about the rural toll roads through Florida. And there was a lot of discussion on that about alternatives to I-75, like US 19. And they're already built, Suncoast Parkway. So thank you for that. Please go back into our archives and listen to that on WMNF.org. If you didn't hear that show, it gives you a lot of background about what we're talking about this hour. All right, let's see if we have... here's Tony from St. Pete's going to talk about another subject that was brought up in Florida this week. And Tony says, the FBI confirmed one Florida county voting system was hacked by the Russians in 2016. Republicans cut $300 million from federal budget to tighten voting systems last year, but voting is primarily a state matter. I called my Republican state senator, Jeff Brandis, and his office claimed voting is a federal matter. When I asked why the Republicans who dominate our state legislature have been unconcerned about tightening up our voting systems, I wonder, do our votes really count at all? So that's Tony talking about the Mueller report and the Russian breach of a Florida elections of office, which Steve Bosquet in the previous show in Florida this week speculated was could have been Volusia County. It was not named. The county was not named in the Mueller report. 813-239-9663. We're getting a text here from Bob of Largo. And Bob says, rah, 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 I know Florida can outpopulate Texas. So that's the email, the text from Bob in Largo. So thank you for that one. Let's go to the phones. We do have some people on the line. So I'm going to go to Charlie in St. Petersburg, wants to continue to talk about the roads issue. So hi, Charlie, what would you like to say?
Basically, you know, the population in Florida is going to increase, even if no one else moves into the state. Just from natural growth. Yes, there is going to be development, but, you know, it's a question of planning. If you go to other countries in Europe, which are much more densely populated than we are here, they plan for development. They have closer housing. So, you know, the development is going to continue. Now, the question is that with the population increase, there is going to need to be transportation. Yes, we're going to need to have the roads, but at the same time as the roads, we should also plan for mass transit alongside the roads, commuter rail, and then in the city, some type of form of mass transit. That would solve the problem. I think you would see a lot of people getting off the roads if you did have a viable mass transit system in the state.
All right, thanks so much. We will continue to talk about transportation and about population. So thanks for that input. I think most people will agree with you. That's a good point. Thanks so much for that call, Charlie.
Thank you.
Thanks. And let's hit, see if Susan in Tampa is still on the line. Hi, Susan. Thanks for joining the show. You're on Radioactivity on 88.5 FM. What would you like to say?
Hi, yes. I'm a long-term Floridian, born in Tampa, and noticed also the growth. And I think that the caller that talks about the native habitat, this is why people come into the state.
Susan, you're breaking up a bit. I'm going to put you on hold.
If you know...
Yeah, you're breaking up a bit. Maybe if you can get to a place with good reception, I'll put you on hold and I'll see if we can come back to you in just a minute. So hang on, hang tight, Susan. Sorry about that, but your reception was breaking up. So Mark in Largo wants to talk about the urbanization of Florida. Hi, Mark.
Yes, hi. I'm calling from Largo. I also born and raised here in Florida back in 1961. The caller Gary from Dunedin, he hit it right on the head. This was a beautiful state. It's becoming so overpopulated, and it's just so detrimental to the state, the wildlife, vegetation. But anyway, that's about all I had to say, and I thank you for your time.
Well, thanks for that perspective, Mark. I appreciate that. 813-239-9663. If you'd like to weigh in about Florida and about population and roads, we're talking about a bill that's in the Florida legislature that's popular with the Florida Senate leadership, the president of the Florida Senate, to build toll roads in a lot of rural Florida, including in parts of the Tampa Bay area. And some of our callers have agreed, but most of them so far have disagreed. What do you think? 813-239-9663. It's 11:46 in the morning. My name is Sean Canaan. You're listening to Radioactivity. Rob Lori will be back on Thursday. Let's hear what Vincent has to say. Vincent is in Tampa. Hi, Vincent. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
You know, I'm listening to people talk about harking back to days of yore when life was good and Florida was paradise. But I suspect that most of these people have been on the side of job growth and revenue growth in the state of Florida. And I'm shocked to hear comments like send people back and stop people from coming. I mean, I shouldn't be shocked in an environment like we're in today. We're hearing that mindset in certain corners of the country anyway. But I guess what perplexes me is it appears that they don't understand that this is a state that's driven largely by tourists and tourism and the dollars associated with that. Why would you want to stop people from coming when they come? They quality of life. Progress means things won't be the way they were. At some point, the Native Indian, the Native tribes of America were here, and this place didn't have a non-Native population. And it was really a paradise, and it was tropical and lush. That day is gone, and it's not coming back. And the reality is, the smart thing to do is to think about what could the future look like as we continue to enjoy prosperity and growth in the state of Florida. How do we adjust our infrastructure to address that and to make that comfortable for the people that continue to come here and help this state to thrive? That's the only sensible approach, because we won't be going back to yesterday. That's just the fact.
Thank you so much for that call, Vincent. I'm going to pull your fader down here because of the noise in the background. It sounds like you might be driving. So thank you for those thoughts. And I want to read this email that came in from Bob in Tarpon Springs. Bob says, we need equitable impact fees on new homes. Across the state, they are way too low due to the cozy relationships between developers and county commissions. The higher impact fees would slow growth and at the same time generate more income for infrastructure improvements. So here's someone who's not saying just stop people from coming in or even deport them from Florida. He's giving a one way to make it slow, make, I guess, the market forces slow itself, and impact fees What do you think? 813-239-9663. I'll read one more email before we go to the back to the phones. Here is a text from 941, not signed, unfortunately. It says, rural toll roads equals urban sprawl. No relief or congestion. No relief from congestion, as it won't connect population areas. Environmental disaster. Looked at and shot down in 2014. What's Galvano's angle, money or influence? So thank you for that text from the 941 area code. Commenting about how toll roads are going to lead to sprawl. And we've already seen that in a lot of cases, such as along the Suncoast Parkway. Caitlin in Parrish, you're on the air. What would you like to say?
I'd like to ask a question, and I know no one's going to answer it on the radio right now, but how many deaths will we have to experience at the intersection of Highway 301 and County Road 675 in Parrish? There's been another accident, a life taken Thursday evening, a motorcyclist. And it just seems that there's no ear being given to this by any of the committees that would be responsible for getting a light up. And people who live out there talk about it all the time, and it's just really a very, very dangerous spot. Thank you.
Well, Caitlin, thanks so much for bringing that up. Very appropriate to conversation in this topic. So thank you for telling people about that. So the intersection of Route 301 and 675 in Parrish. So keep an eye on that one, and she'd like a light there. Tony in Pinellas Park, what would you like to say?
Well, really, you got an issue with development on number one, property rights. People bought property maybe 3 months ago, maybe, 125 years ago. What I would recommend for our water use and traffic control and impact is, the minimum lot size for any new construction hereafter is no less than like 2 acres. And if it's an existing parcel and it's 5 acres, it can't be subdivided into anything less than 2 acres. And that would really open up the number of houses we'd have on large parcels, but then we have a lot more permeable surface for water to drain back into the aquifer and whatnot, and a lot less dense population. You have to have people, let them have the benefit of benefiting from their property, but we still facilitate growth, but manage it a little bit easier, and you wouldn't have quite as dense of cities and communities and whatnot. That'd be like basically just damage control more than anything, because you cannot take away somebody's property rights for you can't. You would literally have a civil war if that were to even be proposed in legislation. No more development. It'd be crazy. Okay, thank you.
Tony, thanks for that call. 813-239-9663. If you'd like to join the conversation, you're listening to 88.5 FM, WMNF Tampa, WMNF.org, and the WMNF mobile phone app. And it's 11:53 in the morning. My name is Sean Canaan. You're listening to Radioactivity. Rob will be back on Thursday. And we have Monica, who's calling from Orlando, talking about growth in the state of Florida. Hi, Monica.
Well, hi. Can you hear me okay?
You sound great. Thanks.
Okay. I just want to respond to Gary. To send people back, I came 30 years ago to this country from South America. And that will never stop. I love this country, and I feel like him. I mean, I don't want any more people to come, but it is happening all around the world, and all the countries are getting people from everywhere. In my country, we were getting people from the United States, Germany, China, Japan. It's happening. It's happening everywhere, and it's nothing that we can do to stop it. Just try to do the best, educate people, they come, and follow regulations, and people have to come and adjust and learn and respect this country and the rules, and not to try to change this country to the way they like it or the way they had it before. You have to come here and adjust, respect, and really live like an American. And I do love this country, and this country has given me things that probably my country would never have given me. And I really don't want to change. Don't want to see this country changing to the chaos where I came from. So I'm all for people coming here legally and people that when I came here, I had to take all my vaccines and that they wanted to be sure that I was healthy to come here. And so I wouldn't bring anything, the illnesses. So, yeah, people can come, but legally and through the right channel. So I learn to live the life here, respect the rules and respect the law. That's the way I think. But it's never going to stop. The world keeps advancing, and if we can only contribute the best way we can. That's all what I have to say.
All right, Monica, thank you for that perspective. I appreciate you calling in. So we'll go now to William in Bradenton. Hi, William.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you? Thanks for calling.
Yeah. We listened to this driving down the road. I'm from Florida. I had moved away for years. Finally managed to bring my family back here, which is wonderful. We love it. It's beautiful. And then to hear, I don't know, to me, listening to people talk about not letting people in or setting some sort of limits as to how many people can come into the state or something like that doesn't make any sense. We have a lot of problems. We have a lot of infrastructure problems. We have a lot of climate problems that are coming, happening, and are going to be increasing. And I think that rather than using all those tourist dollars that we have, Disney World and all those others, you know, all these other places we have, beautiful places here in Florida, instead of using all these tourist dollars to give tax breaks to companies like Big Sugar or to individuals to turn the state into a veritable tax haven, which is actually using that stuff to combat some of these things, using that money to combat some of these problems, using those tourist dollars to combat these problems, and of course inviting people in so they can have more money, we can have more money from them that we can use to combat some of the problems like king tides in Miami and other things that are happening and that are going to continue to increase as climate change progresses.
All right, thank you, William. Thanks for the call. 813-239-9663. If you'd like to join this conversation, I'm trying to keep up with the texts as well, but I'm mostly concentrating on the phone calls right now. And Dan in St. Petersburg, you're on the air. What would you like to say?
Hey, I like to talk about transportation and, you know, and the growth, but I want to talk about, you know, how this BRT is supposed to run from downtown St. Pete out to St. Pete Beach, and St. Pete Beach is pushing back. They don't want 60-foot buses, and they don't want to pay. But when I was reading the magazine this morning, they're saying they're starting to look at the regional plan. And so if they see the regional plan could connect them to Wesley Chapel on the buses that they have planned, that's one thing. But this rail question that, you know, Rob asked Alex Sink, I like us to think about the regional possibilities of connecting downtown St. Pete with the CSX line, you know, bringing rail down the interstate and then dropping off at the Home Depot at 22nd Avenue and then running the rail down to connect to the BRT. Then the city of St. Pete might see a regional connection to the airport, and who knows, Orlando too, right? So what do you think about how the regional plan works for Pinellas and Hillsbury? Any ideas on that?
Well, we've talked about transportation a lot. In fact, I had the new CEO of HART on from Hillsborough County a few weeks ago, and we talked about a little bit about how Pinellas will connect to Tampa. There, when they build the new span of the Howard Franklin Bridge, there's going to be room on there. If the community decides to have some sort of rail, there potentially will be room on that bridge for something like light rail or commuter rail. So there, it does seem that if you look around the country and if you look around the world, there most communities are connected with things like rail and streetcars and even high-speed rail if you're talking about intercity. So it makes sense that there should be connections.
But how do you dump into downtown St. Pete? That's the million-dollar question.
Well, that's like, even if it doesn't go into St. Pete, then you have things like the bus rapid transit could connect, sure, or CSX lines or whatever it is. The specifics, I'm not sure, are that important. But, you know, there has to be some sort of connectivity.
All right. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks so much, Dan. Thanks for the call there. And we're about out of time. I want to thank everyone who called in, who emailed, and who texted during the show. You're listening to Radioactivity on 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. My name is Sean Canaan. You're used to hearing Rob Lori in this slot. He'll be back on Thursday. And I want to let you know, to ask you to stay tuned, because coming up after the NPR headlines, we have a great show lined up. The city of Tampa elections are tomorrow. And it's the runoff election for three of the city council races that were not decided a month or so ago. We're going to hear from Joseph Citro, Walter Smith, John Dingfelder, Stephen Lytle, and Orlando Goods from the Tampa Tiger Bay Club on Friday. We're going to hear that for the entire hour, starting in 5 minutes and 30 seconds. So I hope you can stay tuned. My name is Sean Canaan. You're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa, WMNF.org. Thanks so much for listening to Radioactivity, and we'll see you in 5 minutes after NPR headlines with Midpoint. Stand up.